Hi, I'm Dr. Marcia, and this is the Self-Care Chronicle. As a licensed psychologist, I know that I need to practice good self-care to maintain my mental wellness. But maintaining my self-care routine can be a struggle when things get hectic. So I started reaching out to my peers to ask them about their experiences with self-care, and I learned that many of my fellow mental health professionals have similar experiences. Join me each week as I connect with a fellow mental health professional to discuss the challenges of managing our own mental wellness in the midst of a pandemic, social unrest, increasing demand for our services, and a struggle to embrace a me-first ideology, which sometimes feels wrong to a helping professional. Welcome to the Self-Care Chronicle. And welcome, Dr. Lena Harrison. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Dr. Marcia. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Let's just jump right into it. How did you decide to become a mental health professional? And once you did make that decision, what was your journey like to the population that you now specialize in serving?
So my decision to become a mental health professional really took kind of a roundabout way. I think that aspects of identity had always been really salient for me because I'm mixed. I'm biracial. My dad is Black and my mom is white. But growing up, I never really had a vocabulary to talk about what that experience was like for me. And so I really got my first introduction through reading fiction. So I was reading Mildred Taylor, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, Julia Alvarez, and the Time of the Butterflies, books that really were looking at issues of identity for young people. And I started to see myself reflected in those pages. And, you know, as I grew up, went through high school, college, I started reading things like Toni Morrison, Isabel Allende, and really starting to take a more critical look at issues of identity and how larger systemic issues can impact individuals. When I got to college, I majored in culture studies. So that was one of those liberal arts degrees that really doesn't get you a job right out of school, but it did really start to formulate my critical consciousness and really give me that vocabulary that I was always looking for. So how I jumped from there to becoming a mental health professional was shortly after college, I went through a really horrible breakup and I went to therapy for the first time. And my therapist started bringing in aspects of identity, like what it meant for me to be biracial in the context of this relationship. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, we're supposed to be talking about my broken heart right now. And she really helped me see how related those things are, you know, that the personal is political. And I was so moved by that experience that I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. And so I went to grad school for clinical psychology. I was at Palo Alto University. And my academic area of emphasis was in diversity and community mental health. That academic area of emphasis was good for the time. It was also a product of the time. We were very much looking at systemic issues, but yet and still it was about, well, how do we work with the Black population? How do we work with the LGBTQ population? There was no critical self-reflection on Western psychology and the whiteness that is inherent in Western psychology. And it wasn't until I got to my internship and my postdoc at the VA Caribbean healthcare system in San Juan, Puerto Rico, that I had two supervisors that really introduced me to theories of liberation, anti-racism, intersectionality, functionality, privilege, power. And that is what really, I would say, formulated my orientation. Throughout all this time, I've been at the VA, I've been at the Department of Veterans Affairs, working with substance use populations. And I think we'll get to this a little bit later, but I'm now starting to shift my focus to work with more women and girls of color. The events of the last year have really showed me that my time with veterans, while very fulfilling and rewarding, and it was such an honor to work with them, that it's now time for me to shift focus to another population that I feel accountable to, and that is just really near and dear to my heart. And it feels very important at this moment in time to be working with women and girls of color.
That's a really interesting journey. Absolutely. So now you are in private practice?
Yes, I'm in private practice. I'm expanding my work with individuals. I'm also looking to start more groups because more and more I'm convinced that healing happens in community. I think that there's so much healing that can be found in the collective. And in addition to that, I'm also doing some consulting work in the areas of anti-racism, equity, diversity, and inclusion.
Okay, that's excellent, much needed work. For you, what is the most stressful thing about your job?
That's a great question. There are many stressful things. I would say that the most stressful piece, though, is, you know, just constantly questioning the impact that you're having, whether you're having an impact. You know, there's 168 hours in a week, and you're only in therapy with someone for one of those hours. So a lot of the work happens outside of that. And it's finding a way to support the client in bridging what we're doing in that 1 hour and translating it to the rest of the week where I'm not there. So I would say that's the piece that I struggle with the most. And also I'll add, and this is related to this idea of impact. You know, I was trained very traditionally in Western psychology. That has its place. And there's some inherent harms that are baked into that because of its links to white supremacy, capitalism, colonialism, patriarchy. And so as I unlearn those things and look to replace old strategies with more liberation-based approaches, I'm kind of in this liminal phase where I'm doing a little bit of both and kind of questioning how impactful I am as my process is undergoing this transformation.
Has your ability to deliver services to the people you served changed at all since COVID? And if so, how was that it was impacted?
Yes, it was. I think similar to many therapists, my work went from in-person to virtual pretty much overnight. And up until that point, I never realized how much I relied on nonverbals and body language during therapy. And so now I'm relegated to a little square on the screen, and so is my client. And I just remember feeling exhausted at the end of every day, and I couldn't figure out why. And I realized that part of my way of communicating and holding space had been stripped from me. And so all I could rely on really was my voice. And so that was a really big transition for myself. And I know for many of my colleagues, they reported similar experiences.
Absolutely. I think as mental health professionals, there is that aspect that we're used to being in a room and we're used to reading body language. I also think there's just some aspect of when you're in the room with someone, there's a certain atmosphere or vibe or whatever you want to call it that energy. Just isn't there. Yeah. Like the energy is just, mm-hmm. You can feel the energy. And so that informs you of what's going on. And you just have to find other ways with the screen to figure out what this person is feeling, what they're giving off, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing, though, that I would add on the flip side about how COVID changed my practice, clients started to ask me how I was doing, and they really wanted to know the answer. So rather than what it was more like before was kind of the perfunctory, like, oh, how are you? How are you? It was like, no, really, how are you? Like, how are you managing? How are you hanging in there? And I realized very quickly that, you know, the traditional Western psychology response to just say, oh, I'm fine, and then shift focus back to them, that just began to feel more and more disingenuous. And I started to show up much more authentically with my clients in terms of telling them how I really was, telling them things that I was struggling with. You know, when they were talking about what was going on in their life related to the pandemic, you know, I could relate to so much of it. So that was the first time in my professional career where I was going through the exact same experience as my clients in real time. And I found that, you know, it really served us and served the process for me to just be a human. You know, it's interesting that in this profession, we're often trained to like compartmentalize our humanity. And the pandemic just made me stop that with a quickness. And I think that my therapeutic relationships have flourished because of it. So it's one of those very strange silver linings of the pandemic that I'm actually very grateful for.
Yeah, that's really interesting. in terms of your self-care, can you talk a little bit about what self-care means to you, what you do for self-care, your go-to methods, things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Self-care is very important to me. And like many therapists, psychologists, social workers that I know, I don't practice it as well as I preach it. I would say that I definitely struggle with consistency. So the same things my clients struggle with, I also struggle with. And part of that is the nature of the job. You know, as a psychologist, there's many different things that I can do. So as I've mentioned right now, you know, I've been at the VA, I've been running my private practice, I'm consulting, I might get invited to write a paper with someone, you know, I got invited to be on your podcast. So all really wonderful things, and they add up, right? They take time. So it's easy to let the self-care go when your plate is really full. I know that moments when I have been consistent with my care, I've been able to be consistent because I started out really small. So I love this idea of lazy goals. So I would just start with something that, you know, I knew I could do. And even if it seemed really small, I would like celebrate the hell out of it. So if it's just like one exercise class a week, like that is a win. And then just do that. One time I did that for like 3 months. I would go to a Pilates class on a Sunday afternoon and I just felt great about myself. And then I started adding to it. That's really when I've experienced the most lasting change in terms of my self-care. That's when I've experienced the most benefit. But like a lot of people, the pandemic just totally threw a wrench in that. And it's kind of ironic because I had all this time at home, but you know, energies were off. Life was weird and strange. I was isolated. So I'm hopeful I can get a little bit more consistency back into my self-care routine.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that idea of lazy goals, because it is that, the idea of just a little bit of a at a time. Because I think that traditionally the idea is I'm going to make these big changes and here's how I'm going to do it. And then if one day, you know, if you don't reach those, then you end up feeling terrible and guilty and like, oh, I should have done this or I should have done that. But I love that idea of just one thing and then adding to it from there.
Yeah, it's very effective.
Yeah. So you said that one of the things that's really difficult for you is there are so many opportunities, so many things that you want to do. And so you end up having a lot on your plate. And then self-care doesn't always get practiced as much as you want it to. Are there any other things that you find keep coming up as obstacles to regular self-care?
Yeah, I would say being exhausted at the end of the day and just kind of wanting to binge watch some shows on Netflix rather than doing the things that I know that will really sustain me. I do think that TV or kind of those passive self-care activities definitely have their place. But when you're doing it out of avoidance of something else, that's kind of when you know that you've crossed that line. So yeah, I think that just being really tired is something that gets in the way. And then it becomes this cycle, right? So you know that the self-care will help with your exhaustion, but you're too exhausted to start it. And so, yeah. And so that again, that's where the lazy goals come in.
I love that. I think that's great. I think we do. We put so many expectations on ourselves for certain things to be perfect, done perfectly at a perfect time, in a perfect order. And it's just so much. It's a lot to expect of ourselves.
It really is.
We've been talking about the pandemic and COVID-19 having changed all of our lives and how that's impacted practice. But can you talk a little bit about how the impact of not just COVID-19, but also everything that we've experienced since the beginning of 2020? So we had quite a full year. We had the not just the pandemic, but the protests, watching on television over and over and over again as unarmed Black people were murdered for no reason or with very little provocation. We had the terror attack at the Capitol in January of 2021. And then we've had, since last year, this increasingly unbelievably violent spate of random attacks on Asians. And so we're just watching all of these things unfold. Can you talk a little bit about if those things impacted your own mental health as a mental health professional of color? And if so, how?
Yes, they absolutely did. I would also add voter suppression to that list. So, you know, we saw these landslide. We saw this huge movement in Georgia and other states to really support Black people and other marginalized individuals in voting. And now we're seeing this, just this huge backlash in state legislators, legislatures around the country, bringing up just these crazy rules, basically to stop people of color from voting. So there was one in Georgia that's like, you can't bring food to people waiting in line or while they're waiting to vote and things like that. So it's just all part and parcel of the same white supremacist tactics. So it absolutely has affected me, all of those things. And I started calling in more often, or calling out to work from work. And the internalized, like, capitalistic white supremacist part of me was like, oh, you're at home anyway. Like, why can't you just, you know, log into these meetings and do these meetings? Like, it's not that big of a deal. But then the part of me that is steeped in anti-racism and liberation-based work is like, no, like, you need to rest. Like, this shit is wild. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on your podcast, but I don't know how to call it anything
else. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, this shit is wild. Like, the times we are living in are just completely insane and totally expected at the same time. And that is a really weird space to navigate while you're also trying to hold space for other people. So I'll say that, yeah, my self-care involved calling out from work when I wasn't able. And it also involved action. So, you know, writing postcards to voters, figuring out ways that I could, you know, little ways that I could still feel like I was involved in acting consistently with my values. You know, when the Trump administration came out with that executive order banning diversity and inclusion trainings in federal places, banning the use of certain words, which were just foundational to the work that I was doing in my clinic, in my clinic at the VA, you know, I really got down to figuring out what movement can I make. All of that I see as self-care also, because self-care isn't just about me. It's about the larger communities that I'm a part of. And so if you're practicing self-care just for yourself, you're doing it wrong.
Okay, that's interesting. Can you say more about that? Like, a little bit more about the idea of, because I think I understand what you mean, the idea of, it's an, I want to say, like, altruistic kind of idea that what empowers you or what makes you feel better is what helps other people. Am I anywhere near what you're talking about? And B, can you say more about what you're talking about?
So what I'm getting at is, you know, I can be doing all of the self-care things, right? And I can be doing them perfectly. So the meditation morning and night, the healthy diet, the exercise. But if I'm really well and communities are struggling, then my belief is that that self-care is for naught. And so as I'm doing the things for myself, it's also important that I'm doing things for communities that I'm accountable to, for communities that are important to me. It's this idea that my liberation is bound up in the liberation of everyone. And it's a bi-directional process that when one of us gets free, we all get free.
Okay. So I think that there is an aspect of you're doing your self-care in addition to self-care that helps liberate others or helps lift others from whatever kind of oppression, systematic barriers or obstacles are put in their way. So it sounds like the idea is that there is this part that you're talking about, like eating well and meditation, all that. But there's also the other aspect of it that includes other people, so that you're not just saying, this is all about me right now, everyone else go away. But it's, well, yes, there's that. And we have the other aspect of it. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. Yes, exactly.
Okay. And so you touched a little bit on this, but I'd like to hear more of your thoughts if possible. So as a mental health professional of color, you are not only helping people in therapy and also in your anti-racism work, you're helping people who are impacted a great deal by all the things that are going on, the pandemic and the anti-Asian violence and the Black citizens being murdered in the streets and the terror attack at the Capitol, just all these things that are escalating and all these things that have been incredibly stressful, incredibly traumatic for so many people, especially over the past year. How are you still able to, as a mental health professional of color, not be so overburdened by all of the things that you're seeing, plus all the things that are dumped into your lap as part of, you know, the profession? How are you able to make it so you're not so overwhelmed by that, that you're just unable to function?
Mm-hmm.
And you are able to come back day after day and continue to do this important work?
Yeah. I think that one of the things that really saved me last year is that a colleague and friend of mine, Dr. Jamita Barlow, she put out a call on Facebook offering to hold Ubuntu healing circles for anyone who was interested. And I realized that I absolutely needed to be holding space with other people of color during this time. And I worked in a clinic at the VA with a supervisor who was very understanding and supportive of my efforts to bring issues of anti-racism and liberation into our clinic. And due to the time difference, because she was on the East Coast and I'm on the West Coast, it cut into my work day. But he supported me attending those trainings, those circles, because he saw that those would also inform the DE&I work that I was doing in our clinic. So I was able to go to those. And we met, I want to say, for about 3 months. I don't think I missed one session. And it was just so wonderful to just have a place to come every week and let my hair down and give and receive and hold space in community. And I think that that was really, really critical for me during that time, because things got pretty dark last summer, I know, for all of us. And I was just so grateful for that space.
Yeah, that sounds like it was very powerful and very nurturing to be able mm-hmm. to be part of that experience.
It was. It really
That's
was.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much for this and for the work that you're doing. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to previous episodes of the show, but at the end, I do something called the finisher, mm-hmm. which is just actually a random question that has nothing to do with mental health or okay. self-care or cool. psychology, but cool. I like random questions. So for you, let's see, what are the top three destinations on your travel bucket list?
Great question. Okay. Number one, without even having to think about it, is Bora Bora. I cannot die peacefully unless I have stayed in one of those rooms on the stilts in a hut over the water. Like, I just, that needs to be yeah. a part of my life. I can't, yeah, do, have to. Okay, so Bora Bora. Let's see. I would really love to go to East Africa. I'm sorry, West Africa. I've been to Morocco, but I've never been to Ghana, Ivory Coast, any of those places. And I can't remember which country it's in. It might be Nigeria, where they have it's like this cave, and it was the last place the slaves were before they loaded them into the ships. And I have some friends who have been there recently, and it seems like a really powerful experience. So I would wow. really like to experience that. Yeah. It has a name. It's like the gate, or I'm drawing a blank right now, but you can Google it and find it, I'm sure. And then the third after that, I would say, you know, I'd really love to go to Iceland and do the like hot baths and stuff like that. And it just seems like a really beautiful country with really stunning landscape. And yeah, I definitely love seeing people's photos when they post after having gone there. So that would be my number three.
Awesome. All really cool, cool sounding destinations. One more question. Let's see. What was your favorite TV show in middle school?
In middle school? Oh, man. It was probably The Fresh Prince. I think it may have ended around that time, but I think like every single night at 7 o'clock, they would like have reruns of it. And my sister and I would just like watch it religiously. And yeah, that was a definite highlight of the day back then.
That's awesome. Okay, fantastic. Well, again, Dr. Lena Harrison, thank you so much for being here. And can you tell people how to get in contact with you?
Sure. So my website is www.lainaharrison.com. That is LEIGHNAHARRISON.com. All of my contact info is there on the website, including, I think there's a form to send an email, as well as my phone number should be up there. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to info@lainaharrison.com. In addition to the Daily Meditations Instagram, I do have my @DrLainaNoel, which is my professional Instagram, which I post about issues related to my work. That's DrLeighNaNoelle.
Excellent. This has been amazing. Dr. Laina Harrison, it has been a pleasure.
Likewise, Dr. Marsha, I so appreciate the work you're doing, inviting therapists to reflect on our self-care, because it's so necessary to the work. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes. All right. Well, you take care. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me for the Self-Care Chronicle. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Also, be sure to subscribe to the Self-Care Chronicle on your favorite podcast platform. To find out more about today's episode, or to listen to additional episodes, visit drmarshabrown.com. See you next time.